Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. That's how you hit us on the phones or on Twitter. It's hashtag Giants Chat. He is Lance Meadow. I am John Schmelk. Giants coming off a very disappointing loss to the Dallas Cowboys down in Big D. They fall by 10, 31-21 in a game where they stayed with Dallas for most of the game. The Cowboys pulled away a little bit in the fourth quarter. And much like it's been for a lot of this season, turnovers, mistakes, missed assignments is what cost the Giants. And let's talk about it. And Lance, I think this starts on the defensive side of the ball whenever you give up 31 points. Generally speaking, the Giants' offense did a good job of making the Dallas Cowboys drive a long field. They had two drives of 80 yards or more, another drive of about 74 yards. They let the Cowboys convert 9 of 14 on third downs, 65%. Which is a great number. The Giants were one of the best third down defense teams heading into this game. The Cowboys were the best third down offensive team coming into this game. And I think what it really came down to, and we talked about it last week a lot, the Giants were banged up in the secondary. Dominique Rodgers-Camardi barely played. They were missing their two top slot cornerbacks. And when push came to shove and the Cowboys needed a first down, they were able to get it through the air.
Cowboys dominate also time of possession, too, and they were number two in the NFL coming into the game in that category. They had the ball for nearly 34 minutes. But getting back to your last point, John, the fact that the Giants are behind in the personnel department, I mean, that's a major cause for some of their defensive issues. You're without Walter Thurman, you're without Tremaine McBride, Jayron Hosley, who has struggled. He's been up and down in terms of his performance since he was brought into this system. He's off the suspension. He hasn't really gelled well with this group. Chandler Fenner was utilized. He was beat by Dez Bryant for a 44-yard gain. I mean, you're starting to see the depth chart for the Giants, and the depth chart is just not strong enough. John Beeson goes out, so you're doing a game of musical chairs again at the linebacker spot. You lose Colin Jenkins in the first half. I mean, we're not just talking about one player here or there. We're talking about they lost one player at every single level of the defense. I think Zach Bowman performed very good in the early stages of the game, but as the game progressed, the Cowboys personnel certainly got the better of him.
And it's not just a player at each level. Colin Jenkins is your best and most experienced defensive tackle. John Beeson's your leader and your best linebacker. Dominique Rodgers-Camardi is your top paid number one cornerback. All three guys are missing in this game. And go to the offensive side of the ball. Jeff Schwartz is your big offensive lineman you signed the offseason. Victor Cruz is your top wide receiver. And Rashad Jennings is your best running back. It's hard to win games when all your best players aren't on the football field. It's the bottom line. And I know we're going to get the calls because I got the tweets all day yesterday about firing coaches and making changes and X's and O's. Guess what, guys? X's and O's are all well and good. And they're important. I'm not telling you they're not. But here's the bottom line. Your players have to be better than the players across from them. And if you watched that full game yesterday, can you honestly tell me as a Giant fan, you think the players the Giants put out there on both sides of the ball were better than the players the Cowboys put out there on both sides of the ball? Honestly, tell me if you think that's the case or not. Because to me, with all the injuries, it's hard to argue.
It's very difficult, and that's a big reason why the Cowboys went 9 of 14 in terms of their third down efficiency. The only thing that I won't point to the personnel department to try to utilize as an excuse as to why the Giants' defense didn't perform well, a lot of the third downs, John, that the Cowboys faced, we're not talking about third and ones, third and twos,
and
third
longs.
And threes. Because if you give them that, hey, listen, any defense is going to be in a very precarious situation. But the Cowboys had third downs, third and eight.
You ready? Track
third
them.
And five.
Well done.
Oh, yeah. Third and 10, they scored a touchdown. A third and 16. A third and five. A third and six. A third and nine. A third and 19. A third and six. A third and six. A third and eight. A third and one. And a third and nine. Now, to make sense of that, they had eight third downs for 8 yards or more, the Dallas Cowboys.
And how many of those did they convert?
That I do not have in front of me. That I did not.
That's okay.
Finish the equation with just yet. But this is exactly what I calculated for the time being. We will get that as the show progresses.
And I think that actually speaks to the fact, despite that DeMarco Murray's numbers, 28 carries, 128 yards, 4.6 yards per carry, it looks like he had a fantastic game, right? The Giants actually did a very good job of containing DeMarco Murray on those first and second down runs, as is evidenced by third and middle range, third and long numbers right there. They didn't have one third down for less than 5 yards the whole game except for one third and one, which I remember the Cowboys were able to convert. So the Giants' defense really did contain DeMarco Murray. Now they let him break through on a couple of long runs, which, again, defense giving up big plays, which is a problem. But they could not stop Tony Romo and Dez Bryant and Jason Witten and Gavin Escobar and Terrence Williams when they needed to on third downs, and they couldn't get the Cowboys off the field. And that, to me, was the bottom line in this game again and again and again. And then even when they had their best defensive player left healthy, Prince Amukamara, you know, him and JPP, the best two defensive players on the field, and JPP, I thought, played a pretty good game, by the way. But Prince, one-on-one with Dez Bryant, and I'm sure they were giving help to Jaron Hosley. They were giving help to Zach Bowman, and that's why they weren't giving help to Prince. You know what? One-on-one with Dez Bryant, Dez Bryant got the best of him in the second half. He really did.
And more often than not, Dez Bryant is going to get the best of just about any corner in the National Football
League. Any corner. No doubt about it.
So it's not necessarily downgrading Prince
Mukamara.
However, I think you hit on an excellent point, John. What you're saying is you lose depth in your personnel. Now all of a sudden you have to give the guys that you're bringing in some help because you can't leave Jaron Hosley on an island. You can't leave Chandler Fenner on an island. You could leave Prince on an island. However, Prince is going to lose some battles to Dez Bryant. And this is the most telling stat about Dez Bryant. You mentioned that they kept DeMarco Murray in check for the most part in the first half. They also kept Dez Bryant in check in the first half. Second half, Tony Romo completes all seven passes that he throws to Dez Bryant. 7 of 7 to Dez Bryant. And Bryant, of his 151 receiving yards, he had 136 of them on those seven receptions in the second half alone.
Though, in the first half, Prince got bailed out. He was beat badly on that one deep pass. And if not for the JPP pressure on Romo beating Tyron Smith, that could have been a big game.
He was able to knock the ball away
Correct.
As a result.
But yeah. I'm sure what the Cowboys saw over the course of the game, you see what the defense is doing. You make adjustments. They said, look, they're going to trust Prince over here to guard our best wide receiver man-on-man. Guess what? We're going to go after him. And frankly, half the time, Prince actually played pretty good coverage. On those slant routes, Romo had to put the ball in front of Bryant, low to Bryant, to squeeze the ball in there. It's not like Prince got abused here, folks. You're just dealing with a very good quarterback, one of the best receivers in football. And guess what? They're going to catch balls on you. It's not an embarrassment. It's not killing Prince. It's not blaming him for the loss. But that's the situation the Giants were in because of all their injuries. They had to man up Dez Bryant with Prince because they had to help elsewhere. Otherwise, you're going to have Cole Beasley running wild. You're going to have Terrence Williams running wild. And you can't have that.
And Terrence Williams only wound up with one reception, which although happened to be a touchdown. Gavin Escobar had three catches, two of which were touchdowns. I would have thought going in, based on how the Giants were going to try to man up with Dez Bryant, Tony Romo would look elsewhere, and he would try to spread the wealth with some of his other receivers. It actually became a dominating performance for Dez Bryant. He just saw openings in one-on-one, man-on-man coverage.
And one other thing I want to discuss a little bit in terms of the Giants' defense, and we'll jump to the offense in just a second. I thought once again, and I think this is becoming a pattern, Lance, the middle of the field of the Giants' defense continues to struggle. The linebackers in coverage, the safeties in coverage. You saw Anchorol, you know, without naming names, and frankly, I don't know whose fault it was on that first Gavin Escobar touchdown. Who came loose?
It was a variety of people that looked lost on that play.
Who let him come loose? Was it Quinton Demps not paying attention? Was it John Beeson? Was it Hosley?
Jaron Hosley.
I mean, all those guys were in the neighborhood. Then in the Terrence Williams one, it looked like Demps fell asleep a little bit. So, look, you can blame whoever you want. The bottom line is that there are too many big plays that are continuously allowed by this Giant defense, again and again and again.
Well, and part of the equation, too, it is the middle of the defense. Let's face it, the linebackers have not lived up to expectations. Part of it's been the injuries.
And the safeties.
Them, too. But also the lack of the pass rush. I mean, Tony Romo had plenty of time to throw the football yesterday. You were talking about the Terrence Williams touchdown and even the Gavin Escobar touchdown.
Sipping tea.
I mean, he's spiraling around, he's dancing, he get a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, whatever you want.
And it's not like he avoided sacks before he was dancing around. A couple times JPP did a good job of getting around the edge, and I'm not trying to put any pressure on JPP. I thought he probably played his best pass pressure game of the year, especially going up against a guy like Tyron Smith, one of the best tackles in football. I thought he did his best, but he really didn't get a ton of help. I mean, the Cowboys are playing sub-right tackle. Did you see anybody put any pressure on Dallas from that side of the offensive line? I didn't. There was no Ayers over there. There was no Kiwi over there. There was no DeMontre Moore over there. And there was no tackle pressure on that side either.
And the tackle pressure is the missing element, John. You want to get the pressure from the inside. Yeah. Everybody focuses on the edges. You want to get those defensive tackles towards the quarterback. And Jonathan Hankins was fairly quiet.
Was quiet.
And part of it, I think, is losing Cullen Jenkins next to him.
Doesn't help.
It affects the dynamics.
All right, and then offensively, we should touch on that before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. And, of course, your comments on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Big Blue Kickoff Live presented by DraftKings on Giants.com. And Lance, here's the deal. If you can't protect your quarterback, you can't win. And I thought the Giants actually did a decent job of protecting Eli Manning in this game. The Cowboys pressure a couple times, but for the most part, Eli Manning stayed on his feet. Number two issue with the offensive line, this is where it got them yesterday. They couldn't block in the run game. Time and time again, Andre Williams was getting knocked down and hit from the backside, behind the line of scrimmage on very simple run plays. And for whatever reason, the Giants offensive line, where the play was designed to go, I thought there was space. But there was always somebody making a mistake on the back end of the play on that weak side. And Williams is getting hit on the line of scrimmage. And they could not get the run game going if their lives depended on it.
Williams didn't stand a chance more often than not because, as you mentioned, by the time he got the handoff, there were already a few Cowboys defenders right in his vicinity. The numbers don't look too bad when you look at yardage per carry out of this game. They actually have 4 yards per carry. However, if you take away the Andre Williams 22-yard run and you take away, I believe, Peyton Hillis had one for 11 yards, they're about 2.8, 2.9 yards per carry.
And so, by the way, you can also take away the Odell Beckham 11-yard run,
the 13-yard run,
13-yard run.
Yeah.
A lot of those, I think we saw a couple draw plays on, like, third and long that probably skewed that average,
exactly,
too, back up a little bit.
The other thing with respect to the offensive line, they did not do a good job establishing the run. How about the penalties, John?
Yep.
13 penalties on the offense as a whole in the last two games combined.
Can't do it.
Then you take into consideration the offensive line. The offensive line had 4 of the 6 penalties yesterday and had 6 of the 10 last week. So the offensive line has 10 of those penalties on their shoulders. And everybody across the board, Justin Pugh, Will Beatty, a 4th and 1. Tom Coughlin decides to go for it early. Will Beatty gets a false start, so then they're forced to punt. Now, that probably was a better decision anyway, because it's a very risky proposition to go for it when you give the Cowboys very favorable field position.
Especially
but
when
still,
you're not running the ball well.
Correct. But still, it's an opportunity that you let slip away.
No question.
You can't have that happen.
And I don't want to just blame the offensive line. And by the way, I'm not going to pinpoint anybody in that offensive line, because to me, every single guy in that line had missed blocks, had mistakes. But guess what? It wasn't just them. Larry Donnell was a mess again trying to block in the running game. He did good in the pass game, but again, he had a lot of trouble blocking. He had those 2 fumbles late in the games were basically game killers. You wonder how much Tom Coughlin's patience might be running thin with that sort of stuff. Now, he's a good playmaker. You need him in the passing game. I get it. But if you can't block and you have issues fumbling, that's an easy way to get yourself on the bench. But Reuben Randle on a wide receiver screen had a holding penalty that put them in a big hole in the second half. I mean, you just can't make these mistakes. And it's fundamental stuff, Lance, that you have to be better at. And I know people say, well, isn't that coaching fundamentals? Trust me, guys, they coach the fundamentals. Do you know what type of players don't do fundamental things well? Players that aren't very good. That's part of it, too.
The one thing I'll say about just the overall offensive game plan, and we could get real nitpicky, and I'm sure a lot of the fans are going to call in and say, well, why didn't they just abandon the run and just have Eli Manning throw? Of course, we've got a lot of feedback on that, and I'm sure we will dissect that throughout the course of the program. One observation that I was a little bit troubled with, John.
What's that?
Andre Williams and Peyton Hillis, there's nothing wrong with getting them a little bit more involved in the passing game. If the running game is not working, John, and how many times did we talk about this last season or when Ahmad Bradshaw was here? A 2 or 3 yard pass to a running back is just as productive as giving them the ball on the ground. And for us to not see anything. Peyton Hillis had 1 reception. That was it. You have to at least try to get Andre Williams involved, because then you basically hand your offensive game plan over to the defense.
Now, Lance,
that has to change.
I did think they tried a couple design screens in the first half, but it seemed like the Cowboys were blowing them up.
The one with Beckham.
Yeah.
Cowboys had that read beautifully.
I thought they had one for Hillis set up, too, in the first half, if I remember right, that didn't work out, a screen pass. I think they did. And then they had another play that looked like a screen, but I think that was just Eli trying to dump it down. But, look, I agree. Especially a Cowboy defensive line that's trying to use their speed to get upfield, you probably could have tried to keep them a little bit more honest with the screen pass here or there. That's fine. But again, this whole concept of abandoning the running game and just throwing it every time.
No, you can't do that. Yeah.
Here's what happens if that's your plan. Eli gets sacked. Eli gets hit. Eli fumbles. Eli throws picks. Guess why Eli doesn't have a ton of interceptions this year? Sure, the system's part of it. Balance. 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 Running game helps. And if the Giants did just give up on the run and try to pass every time, do you not think the Cowboys would have made some defensive adjustments to get ready for that? Guys, this is a cat and mouse game here. It's not like the Giants making adjustments. The Cowboys go, we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep stopping the run, even though they pass every time. I mean, let's not be silly here.
Real quickly, before we start to open up to phone calls and tweets, I know we have a number of people on the line. Getting back to your point about how they can't abandon the run, look at the third down numbers, John, over the last two games because of the lack of balance. The Giants at the Eagles last week, 2 of 14. Third downs for 5 yards or less, they had 3. Third downs for 10 yards or more, 10.
Woo-hoo.
This week, 5 of 13 third down. Third downs for 5 yards or less, 5. Third downs for 7 yards or more, 8. That included one for 17 yards, 18 yards, and 19 yards.
And that's penalties that get you into those situations.
Of course,
too,
that was a contributing factor.
No question. Got to get into better third. It's manageable to try to, you know, win these games and sustain drives to keep the Cowboy offense off the field. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat on Twitter. It's Big Blue Kickoff Live presented by DraftKings. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. So, Lance, losing Adrian Peterson is not going to ruin your season. You get to start over every day. Hurry, get free entry into one of our $100,000 fantasy football contests this weekend, where first place takes home $10,000. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com, bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Now let's go to the phones at 201-939-4513. Stas is all the way on the West Coast out in Washington. You're up first. Stas, how are you?
Hey, what's up, guys? Tough loss yesterday. I really wanted that one. So quick question, and I actually want your opinion on this because I'm not a Perry Field basher. I actually like him. I liked him in the Bills. I thought he was a great interim head coach over there. I was excited when we got him.
I'm waiting
but
for
I
a but.
I have there is a but because I don't know if the scheme is super complex, but ever since he's been our D coordinator, I always feel like we have missed assignments. Like, I don't care if you get physically beat and you're in the right spot. That's going to happen. But when you see wide open people or when you consistently give up the middle of the field all the time, like, I understand that there's injuries and then there's players, but sometimes I feel like we wait too long to be creative. Like why isn't JPP moving around across that line a lot more? Why do we wait to the very end and we get desperate before we start trying these things? Why aren't we trying to take it to them? It feels like we're, like, 75% of the time, I feel like we're playing a sort of version of a prevent defense. Like, just don't give up the first down or just don't give up the touchdown. When we should be saying, no, let's not give up a damn yard. Like, what's your opinion on that? I'll take it off air. It's just something that frustrates me. I just want to know, what are your guys' thought process on that?
Thanks,
Stas.
Thanks, Stas. I think you maybe could have moved JPP around a little bit more, and I don't think you've moved around a lot this year. I do think that's an option. Do I think that's a big difference maker in the grander scheme of things? No. I think your one criticism is a fair one. Over the course of Perry Fuel's time here, Lance, and again, we've had different players now. I mean, Corey Webster's not here anymore. There are too many situations where guys are not in the right place at the right time back there in the secondary. And all these guys always say, oh, it's communication, it's communication, it's communication. But at some point, if you keep bringing in different players and you keep having the same issues with big plays and guys not being in the right spot, are things maybe too complicated? Remember, every year where the Giants seem to turn things around midseason, right, the players are asked why. And they say, well, we've simplified things. Now, I've had other people tell me that's not true. Some players say that's nonsense. It's an easy thing to say. Coaches tell me it's not true. But it does seem like too many times guys are running free in the secondary, in the middle of the field, and no one's around them. I think it's a fair criticism.
Oh, there's always communication issues, it seems, every single season. I go back to that Bengals game a few years ago. A.J. Green gets the wide-open touchdown. That one play sticks with me. And Corey Webster was on the field at the time, and they were all looking at each other. Remember Antro Roland, Corey Webster? Who do you got? Where are you? And we seem to see that every single game. It's the shrug of the shoulders, hands up in the air,
looking
what's going
confused,
on?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, when it's a trend, that says something about the system. I'm not going to disagree with that aspect. I think part of the reason why perhaps Perry Fuel is not giving the green light to the Wolves and saying, hey, let's send everybody to the quarterback is perhaps a lack of faith in the personnel and the depth chart. And maybe that's too easy of an excuse, but when you look at this depth chart and, listen, Perry Fuel hasn't necessarily given Jaron Hosley a pat on the back during his tenure here. He's a little nervous about the more linebackers and defensive tackles that you sent to the quarterback, John. You're going to expose this secondary. And this secondary is not nearly as strong as it was on paper heading into the season. I'm sorry.
Everyone's hurt.
On paper, it looked great. Yeah. I mean, you have DRC, you have Walter Thurman, you have Prince, you have arguably the best trio in the National Football League. You don't have that trio anymore. You got to deal with reality. So he has to now pull back a little, and I think that's why the scheme just seems too basic and there's no creativity.
And look, you can't play. I know a lot of another criticism and Stoss. This wasn't yours. I get that. But, you know, people say, play man. You got to play man. You got to play man. Guys, the way the league is now, with the way they call defensive holding, illegal contact, and just the way offenses are with all these rub plays, these pick plays that all these teams run, guess what? You can't play man every play. If you do, they're going to kill you. Playing man defense isn't some, you know, cure-all that's going to work all the time. The Seahawks had one of the best defenses in the league last year, or the best defense, especially their secondary. Guess what? They're primarily a zone team. They play a lot more zone than they do man, and a lot of cover three, which is a relatively conservative defense. You have three guys deep on those plays. So, again, do I think the scheme's been perfect? No. Do I think those types of communication plays have to get fixed? Yes. But keep this in mind, and specifically to yesterday's game. On a big third down, you have Chandler Fenner covering Dez Bryant. That's not the defensive coordinator's fault, folks. I mean, the Cowboys ran out five wide receivers. The Giants have to run out five defensive backs and five corners. Guess what? You're going to have Chandler Fenner covering somebody that he's not as good as. That's just the way it's going to go. And the Cowboys took advantage of those matchups time and time again. 201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Nick in New Jersey. Nick, you're up next, pal.
Hey, John. Lance.
How are we doing, Nick? What you got?
Nick is back on the bridge.
Just said. I mean, I got to piggyback off what Stoss said. Yes, just a little bit, a couple minutes ago. I just have not seen any physicality or toughness since the 2011 season. I mean, personnel or not, for some reason, Perry Fuel just doesn't have a defensively physical tough team anymore.
Nick. You can't coach toughness. Guys are either tough.
I totally agree with
or
that.
They're not.
No, totally agree. And you know, you talk about personnel. Believe it or not, I was looking at all the numbers and stats. We don't have any of the same players that we had from when Hakeem Nicks was drafted. Everybody that we've drafted going forward is gone. We have a complete new team.
Well, you're talking about on offense or defense, Nick?
People are missing assignments.
Nick, what are you talking about? You're talking about on offense or defense the personnel is not here?
Defensive. I'm talking like going back that far. We don't have anybody that's been here and learned the system and stayed with it, really.
Well, I mean, Nick, that's how it works in the NFL. Guys turn over. You're going to have changes. I don't think the Giants let anybody go where you're like, boy, they could really use this guy. Justin Tuck's on the wrong side of 30. You know, Jonathan Hankins is doing a good job replacing Linval Joseph. So it's not like they've let guys walk here that I think are some kind of magical cure to what ails them. You know what I mean?
And you had to upgrade the secondary because you lost guys due to free agency. And on paper, I think they made good investments. The problem is these players can't stay healthy.
No, you're right, and it's true. The Dallas Cowboys, John, you said it yourself, was a better team. They got better players.
And that showed yesterday.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Nick is our tweeter.
I did see a number of his
that
tweets.
That jumps off the bridge at the first sign.
Very animated during the course of the game.
He gets very upset.
And it's very difficult for John and I both to get back to everybody who reaches out to us during the course of the games. We try, but you know, we're also paying attention to the game and we have our work assignments.
What I try to do is on the post-game bus ride to the airport for road games, I try to go through all the tweets I got during the game and go through them. But you're doing the post-game show, so that
also
makes it tough.
Well, I do not have the luxury of sitting on a bus during the course of the post-game.
That is true.
You do.
But you do have Jeff Eagles with you.
Correct. Yes, I do.
That's true.
So what are you saying? That Jeff is doing the heavy lifting and I'm sitting back and enjoying the ride, I guess, is what you're alluding to. You should have just spelled it out here. I mean, you don't have to beat around the bush.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yes.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phone and say what's up to Jeremy in Brooklyn. Jeremy, what's up?
Hey, guys. First time caller, long time listener.
What's up, Jeremy?
Appreciate that, Jeremy. What you got?
I have three quick points to make. First, you can see the immediate drop-off in talent. when guys like Marcus Kuhn get in to play the game. One thing in particular is the second Colin Jenkins went down, Marcus Kuhn comes in and like he gets knocked on the floor and the play goes about 20 yards off the left hand side. And then like I don't know the new guy, the corner. Fleener, I think his name is, number 40.
Fenner. You're talking about Fenner?
Yeah, Fenner. You see the immediate drop off, and it's kind of sad because if you're in zone coverage, like Giants were in man to man when Dez Bryant caught that 40-yard touch catch. They were in the zone, and he got turned all the way around. That's not coaching. That's goes up to talent.
Yeah, but Jeremy, you know what, Jeremy? The thing about it is, and I even have a hard time, you know, blaming Jerry Reese for this. I mean, the Giants are down to their 7th and 8th cornerback this year. I don't care what team you have in the NFL. If you're talking about the Seahawks, the Broncos, the 49ers, the Cowboys, the Eagles, whatever, their 7th and 8th cornerbacks aren't going to be as good as the other team's starters. I mean, there just aren't enough good players out there. You know what I mean?
I completely understand, and that's kind of one of the point I wanted to make. The Giants have no one that's, like, really explosive. I thought Prince played a really good game considering everything that went on. And the plays we have, like, I don't think they fit what Perry Field want to do on defense. Prince is coming out. I remember watching him. I was really excited when the Giants drafted him. He's more of a man-to-man cover corner. So was DRC. So was Walter Thurman out of the slot. All but for the Giants, like, a zone is only as good as his safeties. For a long time, Andre Rose playing the slot. You had Stevie Brown getting beat deep. You got Quentin Dempsey who can't start nowhere else, and he comes to the Giants and start. And it's apparent when you put plays like this on the field. Like, it's nothing towards Jerry Reese because you work with, it's nothing towards the coaches because you work with what you got. But it's like it's so apparent, like the drop of the talent. Ruben Randle leads the league in targets, but you see no production out of it. Like it's like. And what Romo did what Des Bryant did last night, it's kind of apparent with, like, that you need like that number one receiver to go to. Like, he didn't have that for a long time. And it's like when things get hard and things get rough, you need that someone to just go out and win and play above the X and O's.
You need playmakers, like, Jeremy. That's what it comes down to. You need guys that are going to go out and make plays.
You made a great point. I made this point last week talking about the Jets for a second. It's hard to win in this league when you don't have corners and you don't have wide receivers. And I'm not saying the Giants are as strapped at those spots as the Jets are, but they've been hit by injuries. I mean, again, no Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, no Thurmond, no McBride, no Victor Cruz. You didn't have Beckham for the first four games of the year. It's hard to play when all these guys that you were depending on at these ultra-important positions aren't out there on the field. It's just it's very tough to make out. And I honestly believe if the Giants and Cowboys, both at full strength, would play 10 games, 5 in Dallas and 5 in New York, I think they'd probably finish about 5-5, 6-4 against each other. I don't think at full strength there's that much of a difference in talent between the two teams. I got to be honest with you.
I absolutely agree, but I think this year it seemed like that the Giants is not there as far as personnel. Like they're not there. Like they're still missing pieces on offense. Like Peyton Hillis, and I remember I think the start of the third quarter, Peyton Hillis got the ball 3 times in a row, and we went 3 and out and punted the ball. It's like all the play calling is so conservative. It's like they're not playing to win. It's like they're playing not to lose. There's a difference when you play not to win, and when you play not to lose, instead of to win. The play calling is so conservative. Like even Prince. Prince, he played well, but I don't think he's aggressive. Like for the ball, he plays well. He's in position, but he just needs to be a little bit more aggressive. Not physical, just aggressive. Sometimes people like they confuse with physicality and being aggressive. If he's aggressive going to the ball, a lot of plays he makes on the ball instead of not saying that they were great throws by Tony Romo to Dez Bryant, and Prince was in great position. But is that like it's like that's what you need? I don't know. Like
Well, Dez is a very unique wide receiver, Jeremy, and appreciate the phone call.
Thank you, Jeremy.
You know, I mean, I think you need to at least take that into consideration. And once again, we're not in the business of trying to make excuses for all the Giants personnel, but most corners in this league have a very hard time, regardless of how the scheme is functioning and how well-disciplined they play, to physically contain Dez Bryant. And Bryant has a height advantage on Prince, too, and that is a big luxury for Dez.
And a reach advantage, too.
Yeah.
Bryant's got those long arms. And it's tough to cover one-on-one. It's not like Prince got toasted. It's not like he got embarrassed. He was one-on-one with one of the best wide receivers in football, and one of the best wide receivers in football made plays on him. And right now, Dez Bryant is a better wide receiver than Prince Mukamara as a cornerback. And I don't think there's a lot of people out there that would argue that coming into the game or during the game. I think Doesn't mean Prince isn't a very good player or not even a Pro Bowl caliber player. He is. But so is Dez Bryant. And sometimes the other guy's better than you on a given day. And Dez was better than Prince.
And Tony Romo made some great decisions and
really?
Great throws yesterday, John. That touchdown pass to Gavin Escobar, you could have not put it in a better place.
How
I'm talking about
that
the second
small
one.
Window?
Yeah.
The one on that seam route? Yeah. There wasn't a lot of space between the linebacker. What was that? Jaquan Williams trailing him?
I think it was Zach Bowman who was
trailing
him, I believe.
And
yeah.
then you had the safety coming over the top, Demps. And he just floated that ball and put it right in that small window. Yeah. It was an unbelievable pass.
You got to tip your cap in those circumstances.
And one thing I want to add on to what Jeremy said, and he mentioned offense. And I will say this. And look, Eli's been great this year. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. 14 touchdowns, 5 picks, about 65% completions. All that is great. But I do think there are some things on this offense that worry me a little bit. Number one, they played some of the worst passing defenses in the league so far. And this is how I'm going to preface this conversation. Arizona's the second worst pass defense team in the league. The Falcons, the fourth worst pass defense in the league. The Texans, the fifth worst pass defense in the league. The Eagles, the 10th worst. The Cowboys are in the middle of the league. So the Giants haven't played great pass defenses. The Lions are, of course, very good. Their defense has been good all
number
year.
One overall defense.
And the Redskins actually have good numbers, which I don't get because their defense is a bit of a mess. But all that aside. Now, with that being said, you figure the Giants' numbers should be really, really good, right? Well, here are some of the numbers that worry me a little bit. Eli has just 17 passes completed of 20 yards or more. That's 19th in the league. In terms of yards per game, Eli is 25th in the league, averaging 224 yards per game. And he's only averaging about 7.1 yards per play. So, again, his numbers are good. I'm not taking anything away from him. I think from what they've asked Eli to do this year, he's been extremely efficient, and he's done everything he can to get these Giants wins. He's thrown one pick that was his fault in the last five games. He's been fantastic. The one pick he had was when Reuben Randall got the ball knocked out of his hands in the end zone.
The Redskins
He's
game.
Been great. But I do think at some point, especially with Beckham back now and on the field, you're going to have to try to be a little bit more aggressive making some plays down the field. If your defense is going to have the type of issues they've had with their injuries the last couple of weeks.
Well, and also if you don't have a running game to rely on, John.
Exactly.
I
that too.
The reason why Eli's numbers are not very high is, think about this, during the three-game winning streak, week three against the Texans, the Giants get 193 yards on the ground. Week four against the Redskins, 154 yards. Week five against the Falcons, 124. Now in the last two losses, 85 yards, and they did get 104 against the Cowboys, but the yardage per carry, if you remove the big Andre Williams run, the Odell Beckham reverse, is nothing to write home about. So when you have the luxury of a running game, it's okay if Eli Manning is middle of the pack. If you don't have the running game, yes, you're right. You're going to need Eli to make some plays bigger than 20 yards.
And yesterday, 21 of 33, 248, three touchdowns, no picks. Obviously, excellent numbers. The 27-yarder to Fells was obviously the big one for the touchdown.
That was
the biggest
an
play of the day. Was the Donnell 21-yarder at the end of the game when the Cowboys are playing that bit of a prevent defense, or was that 21-yarder earlier in the game? I'm trying to remember when he got his 21-yarder.
I have to look back at the play-by-play for that. I know the touchdown was the
27-yarder. Third quarter. It was the third quarter. The
it was later on in the game.
To Donnell.
Okay.
I remember he had those two short ones to Donnell on the last drive. I wasn't sure if one of those went for 20 or not. So he had two completions over 20 yards over the course of the game, which is okay. But, again, I'm a guy that likes to throw it down the field. Personally, that's what I like to do. And I know Giant fans are upset and they wanted to go to a short passing game. But I do think maybe not throw the ball down the field, but at least get more yards after the catch. Get some more yak yards at some point. You know what I mean?
And that's what this offense is built around, John.
Right. And they, generally speaking, Lance, they don't get a lot of yards after the catch. They really don't. Think about it. Besides that one long Victor Cruz touchdown, there's not a ton of yards after the catch in this offense so far this year.
Well, I think part of that is Eli Manning also hitting his players in stride. For example, and correct me if I'm wrong, John, there was a throw to Larry Donnell over the seam. If it's a better thrown ball, I believe Donnell probably runs, and who knows, he could have even gotten into the end zone. So it's the little things like that, where you're putting the ball, where the playmaker is in relation to the throw, you know, that helps get yardage after the catch.
No question. 201-939-4513. You're watching Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings on Giants.com. Let's stick on the phones and go to Jamal down in Dallas, who's probably getting a hard time from a lot of Cowboy fans down there. What's up, Jamal?
Hello?
Jamal, what's up, man?
You're on the air, Jamal. What you got?
How you doing? What's going on, guys? I don't know if you're sure if y'all remember me, but this is Jamal from Albuquerque, but now I live in Dallas.
Oh, nice. Cool. So what's happening?
Yeah, man. Hey, man, yeah, I was at the game yesterday, man, and just some of the things I've seen just from the view I was at, and I think y'all alluded to this earlier in the show, was the short passing game. I mean, good God, I mean, our O-line seemed like we did pretty decent when it came to the passing game. But when it came to the run blocking, oh, man, it was atrocious. I mean, there were people coming in, D linemen coming in free from the backside, stopping Hillis and Andre Williams. I want to know, is there a reason why we don't go to that short passing game with the running back? It seems like Hillis has decent hands. I think Andre Williams is working on his hand. And like you said, you know, 2 to 3 yards on a passing game, a dump pass to the running backs, I mean, just their bodies themselves are going to at least get another 2 or 3 yards. So, I mean, I don't know why that's the issue. Our secondary, oh, man, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10, it was several times we had them 3rd and long, and we could not stop them. We could not convert. I mean, Romo had like 9 to 10 seconds to sit in the pocket on most of those throws, and it was just, man, where's the pressure? Why is the middle of the field so wide open?
Jamal, here's the thing, though. Jamal, if you blitz and you pressure, they're going to have guys running free in the secondary all over the place.
Right. But are our linebackers having a hard time getting to our drops? Like, it seems like they're not dropping either not deep enough, or they seem like they get lost in coverage. I'm not sure.
Well, Jamal, here's the thing. And this is why when I say to Giant fans, you can't abandon the run. Do you know what happens when you play a team like the Cowboys that run the ball so effectively and they run a lot of play action off of that? Your linebackers can't drop very quickly. They have to stick around near the line of scrimmage. Do you know why?
Right.
They have to stop DeMarco Murray. So that's why you want balance. If you have balance, you can take those linebackers out of coverage a little bit, and then you get those openings down the field with the Wittens, with the Gavin Escobars. And I think that was a big reason why the linebackers sometimes weren't as deep in their coverages as maybe they should be, because they have to worry about DeMarco Murray.
Right. Yeah, and is there a reason why we don't go to the short passing game? Or not even that. Y'all were just saying to it in the last segment, why don't we go deep? Like, I felt like the weakest part of the Dallas Cowboys second was the secondary. And we didn't attack them enough until toward the end of the game. I felt like we should have attacked them earlier, because that's the weakest part of their defense, I believe. The weakest part of their defense is the cornerback and secondary. And I felt like we played to their – you know, we played to what they wanted us to do. They dictated how we should operate. Well, I felt like we should have used Odell a little bit more and used his speed. I mean, the man runs a 4-4. Let's use it.
And that, looking back, would have been a good suggestion, Jamal. I'm not necessarily going to disagree with you. For some reason, they had Odell Beckham run a couple of shorter routes. That's where he did most of his damage, because the goal is, as John and I were talking about earlier, Jamal, get him a 5 or 6 yard catch and then let him run for another 10 yards as opposed to send him down the field for 20. I think that's exactly how this offense is structured. You know, Randall has had the case of the dropsies over the last few games. That's been an issue when they've tried to go deep to him. And
by the way, he had 2 more drops yesterday.
Correct. So that's been an issue.
Yep.
Outside of those two, you know, you send Larry Donnell on some deep routes. Kevin Ogletree just came aboard, so you're not going to open up the playbook for him just yet. Preston Parker plays out of the slot. He's not a long-distance guy. I mean, I think the personnel you're lacking, too, to all of a sudden go deep. That's another big factor.
By the way, I think I saw Beckham in the slot more than Parker yesterday. I saw Beckham in the slot an awful lot in that game.
And McAdoo said they were going to move everybody around, so that's not necessarily a surprising development. Expect everybody to move around. I don't think they're now all of a sudden going to say, okay, Randall and Beckham on the outside and Parker and Ogletree in the slot. I think basically it's open season right now. Let's just try to get the best matchup.
And I think the Cowboys are weaker at safety than they are at corner, and that's why the middle of the field, I think, can be vulnerable. Church and Wilcox aren't very good in coverage. Scandrick and Carr and Sterling Moore, they're not great players, but they're okay players.
Oh, Scandrick's been their best member of the secondary.
Exactly. Jamal, finish up. What else you got for us before we say goodbye? Did we lose him? I guess we lost Jamal.
I appreciate the phone call.
Thank you, Jamal. Good to hear from you. Jamal from Albuquerque, you call all the time. It's good to hear from him again.
Moving around the country.
No question. 201-939-4513. I know this guy can't be very happy heading into the bye. He's going to be stewing all weekend. Maybe he can do some barbecuing in his backyard, some bird watching, something like that.
Bird watching is one of our favorite hobbies.
And that's Len in Maryland. Len, what's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, Len?
Doing well, Len.
Well, you know, what can you say? I think you summed it up. The Cowboys put better people on the field yesterday than we had, and but that might even out. I'm going to try to stay positive here. Look, we're 3-4, 9 games to go. We're into the bye week. It comes at a good time. It's almost, you know, almost midseason. These guys have been together 12, 13 weeks now, going back to training camp, and so this is the time for it. Maybe we get some people healthy. We get some of our guys back. The coaches have time to look at what they've been doing, the play calling and so forth, and also, you know, defensive schemes. And, you know, we come back and, you know, there's still 9 games left. Yeah, you know, the passing game seems to be predicated on getting people the ball and having them run with it after the catch.
Yep, yeah.
And it's even when you're looking at some of the first down catches. I mean, it's short of the first down. It's 6 yards, it's 7 yards, it's 8 yards, and we're hoping guys are going to, you know, get to the first down marker.
You know, Glenn, it's funny. You mentioned this one play that the Giants have run all the time this year, and quite frankly, it works almost every time, so I'm not complaining about it. They love running that play where they have a slot receiver on one side with a wide receiver set out wide near the sideline. The slot runs a little 3 yard out. The outside wide receiver moves up, blocks the outside corner, and the wide receiver tries to run behind him. It was the same exact play that they ran with Preston Parker yesterday when he was short by a half a yard. But that play has actually been very effective this year. But I think, Len, that's a perfect example of the type of play you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And that's I think a lot of this offense, even the longer pass plays, I mean, are really kind of – shorter than we've expected them to be. I guess that leads me to say, and again, thinking positively here, I think we've only seen about a third to a half of what McAdoo really wants to do with this offense. Now, you could ask yourself the question, well, what's holding it back? You know, we got the speed guy now. We got Beckham. Four catches for 34 yards. Two touchdowns. He's going to be terrific. I'm not knocking Beckham, believe me, when I say
this. He's going to be a good player.
He's
going to
be a terrific player. Yep. But, you know, that's 34 yards is not what we want out of Beckham.
He got two touchdowns.
Yeah, he got two touchdowns. I'm not – again, this is not a knock on him. But
Len, you sound like his fantasy owner, to be honest with you. You know, sounds like you could have used the 10 or 15 more yards to give you a few
PPR
points.
Maybe.
We could – We can lead more yards. This would lead me to say one – you know, just a couple other things if I can go on here for a minute or two. You know, I'd like to see them put these games in Eli's hands a little more. I know, you know, five interceptions, everybody's happy. Only five interceptions, everybody's happy. Let's get this game back in Eli's hands. And, you know, if I was Eli, I'd be a little, say with McAdoo, come on, let's get this thing going here.
Well, Len, I think the key, Len, I think you make a good point. I think there's a balance between being too safe and not being aggressive enough, and then being too aggressive and putting your quarterback and the football in danger. I think the key is to find that happy medium where maybe Eli might throw a couple more interceptions, but you sacrifice those two or three interceptions to get 6 to 8 more plays of 20 yards or more. You know, you have to figure out that balance.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I want to see Eli with a more active role in all of this. And I'm hoping this week and a half, and I know he'll stay in touch. He's not just going to disappear for a week here. That he's talking to McAdoo about him taking a more active part in this offense. Let's move this game along. Let's upgrade. Let's get some more offense into this game. Now, let me go to the offensive line and try to stay positive there as well.
Good luck.
It's a well-known fact that individually these guys are not good run blockers. I mean, these five guys that we're starting individually, if there's a weakness, it's run blocking with all of them. Now, you put that together collectively and, you know, you hope, well, maybe, you know, they can help each other out, you know, things like that. The one place where they've been pretty good, guys, they've done better, and this is, I'm coming down on Walton now. They've done better against 3-4 defenses when they're running the ball. Much better.
Yeah,
much
I think
better
that's fair.
Against 3-4 defenses.
Yeah.
Okay? Listen. You know the old story about the heavyweight boxer with the strong right hand? He can knock down a building. But if the building moves, we got a problem. And I think this is what happens against 4-3 defenses. There's a lot of movement up there. Walton can't handle it. He can go one-on-one with the nose tackle. But when you start overloading, you know, you look at all the games, even with the Eagles. I don't know what the Eagles were running. That's a hybrid defense. That guy Davis just, you know, he threw caution to the wind that night. They came out with stuff they're not going to show again all year long. They won't show that defensive. They won't show some of those defensive sets all year long. So I'm going to call that a hybrid defense. But, all right, now here's the positive. You know, Indy runs a 3-4 defense. I think we can do continue to, you know, let's not abandon the run. I think this offensive line, if you look back now, all those teams we beat, and even as far back as Arizona, you know, 3-4 defense. And I'm staying positive, guys. We got Eli. Anytime you put Eli on the field, we got a chance. Let's give the guy the ball. Let him throw the ball down the field. Open it up a little bit. Open it up a little bit.
Well, hey, and I think as they get everybody healthy, and appreciate the phone call, Len. Thanks so much for weighing in. I think as they get everybody healthy, you know, they'll look to expand a little bit. But I'm looking at the numbers, excuse me, on the season right now. Eli Manning has attempted 230 throws, and they've run the ball 213 times. So there has been good balance overall through the seven games so far, where they have even given Eli Manning a little bit more flexibility to throw the ball. Clearly, you want to see them get deeper down the field. You get Rashad Jennings back. That adds a new dimension in terms of a running back who they have faith in pass protection, as well as throwing him the ball and dumping it off to him. So that should help. But, you know, even if you're looking at, from Len's perspective, all the different defenses that they're going up against, whether it be the Colts, the Niners, and the Seahawks, and say, okay, well, maybe the Giants get back to their running ways, all three of those teams still have good offenses, and the defense is still a troubling aspect. So, hey, even if the offense takes some strides and you get into an offensive clinic, right now, if the Giants' defense is on the field with a minute to go, do you have faith in that unit making a stop when they need it the most? And that's a fair question to throw out right now.
And just to the offensive line point, Pro Football Focus do have their grades up now for the game yesterday for the Giants' offensive line. They have Will Beatty as the worst-performing offensive lineman, especially against the pass. Jeremy Mincy having his way with him. Weston Richburg is the next guy that struggled. Both Pugh and J.D. Walton have negative grades. The only offensive lineman grading out positive, again, according to Pro Football Focus, was John Jerry, and that's only barely. So overall for the Giants, Larry Donnell did not grade out well in terms of blocking, as you might imagine. Eli graded out well in the game, and Daniel Fells graded out okay, but certainly not a banner day for the Giants offensively, according to Pro Football Focus.
And this is now two straight weeks, John, where the offensive line has not graded out too well. And when you start to see a trend, it raises some eyebrows. They are going to get Jeff Schwartz back, we should mention. Well, we don't know for sure, but he is eligible to return, I should say, once you get to that Monday night game following the bye. 3 or 4 weeks ago, if you would have said they need to throw Jeff Schwartz back into the lineup, I would have looked at you like you're crazy because the chemistry is starting together.
Now you start thinking about it.
Now, all of a sudden, you got to give it some serious thought. Hey, Jeff Schwartz comes back. I don't think you're keeping him on the sideline. You put a lot of money in him. He was one of the best free agent pickups. And this offensive line needs some lift. And I think that it would be the wise decision to all of a sudden integrate him back onto the line. However, John, you bring him back, what do? Are you taking Richburg out of the left guard spot? Are you taking Jerry out of the right guard spot? Are you moving Richburg to center to get Schwartz back in the lineup? I mean, there's different equations that we could start to speculate about.
It's tough. And defensively, by the way, very quickly, we'll have Pete Domelatis on tomorrow to talk about the grades for Pro Football Focus, not only for the game against Dallas, but also kind of a bye week status report on where the Giants are at. So defensively, in terms of the Giants' grades, Jason Pierre-Paul graded out fantastically, especially against the run, getting the best of his battle with Tyron. So Jonathan Hankins had a positive grade, so did Jameel McClain, but they had Kiwanuka struggling. Both safeties had rough games. Both backup tackles didn't play particularly well, and the corners, other than those two guys, graded out slightly negative. So, you know, there you go, and that's how you get a loss. 201-939-4513. You're watching Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry, get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home $10,000. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter Blue to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter Blue for free entry now at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. Let's go back to the phones at 201-939-4513. Let's see who's been holding the longest, and that's Joey in Las Vegas. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, guys. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Joey. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Well, I'm not the greatest in the world. My biggest question is to the defense, Terry Fulham, why does Beeson keep coming back if he keeps getting out every single game? Why not keep McClain in there where he's nice healthy. Looks like he's got a hold of the defense. And why is the defense every time he's coming out looking like they're lost, like you said earlier, Sean? They're always looking at each other like, well, you got him, you got him. Do you know where he's going? Do you know where he's going? Why do they look lost and not comfortable?
I wish I had an answer for that.
They look comfortable. They look like they know where they're going. Who's assigned to who? I got him no matter what. And if not, I know you got him. Same thing with the offense. Nobody looks comfortable. Everybody looks like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? Eli's like a deer in the headlights. Come on, guys.
Well, Joey, it wasn't too bad in terms of pass protection, Joey, yesterday. I think the previous game, that would have been a fair
point. No, they were great. They were. They held up great.
Yeah.
But you look at them now. You look at the Cowboys over here who were tearing up Seattle. I mean, they just manhandled Seattle all over the place. They did what they did with Seattle, right? And that's defending Super Bowl champs. So now you're looking at Giants taking them on. I thought Giants would be good after taking on the Falcons. Looking at number one offense, I'm like, we're kicking their butt. We're whooping them down. Then Philly comes out, and then Dallas comes out. It's like the division guys come in like a kind of bully big brother and knock us around a little bit. Why do they look like that in the face of division foes, and they don't look like that in the face of, let's say, the Jaguars or who else are, the Titans? They don't look like that. They only look like that with division rivals, like they're about to get their heads beat in really bad, and they're not sure of where to go. Why?
Well, I think you also need to look back. It is a fair question, Joey, but you were alluding to the fact about the Falcons game and the Texans game during that three-game winning streak. And, once again, I'm not here to downgrade the victories, but if you're to reflect back and wonder why has there been such a disparity, well, Atlanta had an extremely banged-up offensive line, Joey. I mean, you were going against a line that had lost two or three starters in the span of a week. We're not talking about they had 3 or 4 weeks to regroup. The Texans were without Arian Foster, who's an explosive playmaker. Then you take into consideration the Redskins game. They had 6 turnovers in that game. 6 turnovers can help cover up a lot of your issues because of great field position. So, you look back at some of the wins and you say, wow, the Giants were in a good position. The ball bounced their way. Now when the ball doesn't bounce your way, you have to get back to fundamentals. And because of the lackluster personnel, you can't overcome some of those obstacles.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They look for some reason like they are lost out there. I mean, I know some key guys are missing. DRC, he's coming back and forth. Listen, don't re-aggravate the injury, DRC. Stay out if you need to, man. Stay out a week or two, make sure you're good, come back. Play lights-out football like Giants know how to do. But, don't come back in and with everybody there. I mean, every single player that comes in and out there, come in, know what you're going to do, contribute to the team. At least give us the fans something, that's like, come on, guys. Because, yesterday, how many times did we see Witten get open? I could see him from my TV getting open. Like, guys, there's Witten there, and he's open, and he caught the ball.
Well, Joey, honestly, defensively, you have a point. And at times, they did look lost. They did look confused. But I don't think it's fair to put that on the offensive side of the ball. Eli seems to be on the same page as his receivers. I don't think there's a whole lot of confusion on offense, to be quite honest with you. I really don't. And the offensive line has to run block better. They have to. There's no question about it. No one's going to argue with you on that point. And defensively, yeah, there seems to be some confusion, but a lot of it, too, is personnel. And when you have a lot of injuries, guys, look, I know people love X's and O's, and they love to talk about it because, and this is how I see it. I think people like to talk about X's and O's because they want a quick fix. They want to say, well, if we just played more man, we'll be fine. If we just blitzed more, we'll be fine. If we just did this and we just did that. And unfortunately, as a fan, you want it to be that simple. But in reality, often it's not. Usually there are deeper fundamental problems that you can't fix by just changing a simple defensive strategy. When you're running out Chandler Fenner out there and he's covering Dez Bryant or Terrence Williams and Jaron Hosley's covering somebody better than him in the slot, I don't care if Perry Fuel's running, Tom Landry's defense. Guess what? It's going to be very difficult to stop people. Same thing on the defensive line. Once you get Beeson out of linebacker, you lose Colin Jenkins, it's going to be tough to stop DeMarco Murray. It's just a matter of the other team having better players sometimes. And I think yesterday, when push came to shove, especially when the Dallas offense was going against the Giants defense on the all-important third downs, Dallas won two-thirds of the times. And when the other team converts two-thirds of their third downs, it's going to be very hard for you to get them off the field. It's going to be very hard for you to win the game.
100% correct on that, and also agree with you. One last thing on the Chandler Fenner. I'm like, guys, you sign him and you release him. You sign him, you release him. Give these guys a home. Let them stay somewhere. Hey, I'm settled. I'm here. Let me get into the offense instead of shit. I'm going again. Let me come back again. Sorry.
Well, in fairness, I mean, they had to get rid of him because they needed to upgrade some other depth chart issues that they had, and then they wanted to bring him back to the practice squad.
And yeah, he was on the practice squad. Right. So he has been in the building, he's been in the meetings, and he's learning everything with everybody else. So
the last caller, Joey, who was also alluding to the fact about Beeson and DRC being so banged up, John, and, you know, why don't they just shut them down? You have to keep in mind, these are injuries. They're not going to go away even if you shut these players down for 2 or 3 weeks. These are going to be season-lingering injuries, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, Beeson for sure. DRC's
well,
like
DRC's
a muscle-soft tissue thing. If he takes a couple weeks off, he might be able to get
John,
better.
It seems like it's every muscle and every tissue on his body.
Well,
I mean, it's the hip, it's the ankle, it's the IT band. Did I miss something on the checklist?
Back spasms.
I mean, it's everything. I'm not trying to make jokes out of this, but every day you wake up, you look at the injury report, DRC's got another ailment. What else is new? So, you know, I don't see this going away so quickly. However, this is what I will say about managing injuries. It seems to me that when the Giants are exposed on defense, it's because they started a guy who going into the game was plagued by injuries. He comes out, and the next guy in is not ready to go into the game physically or mentally, and then you have breakdowns. So if they're not 100%, I'd rather go with the backup, get him prepared all week. He's practicing to begin with, and just have the guy start from the get-go, so this way you don't have to all of a sudden juggle people around during the course of the game.
Yeah, the Beeson thing is an issue. They're going to have to figure something out with that. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie I talked to after the game, and you heard it on the FAN post-game show. He thinks the 2 weeks is going to help him a lot. We'll see if that's actually the case. Final call of the show at 201-939-4513. And it'll be Dave up in Rochester that wraps up the show. We've heard from Dave in a while. I think this might be a football call, too. What's up, Dave?
Hey, Johnny. Good. Yeah, it might be a football call, but I just called to wish you. I know it's going on 4 months of you got a 4 month anniversary coming up. I want to say happy anniversary. Hopefully things are still good.
Yeah, it is coming up on 4 months, Dave.
Wow, you know his relationship better than he does, Dave. That's impressive.
Yeah, Johnny, I wish you a happy birthday last month, too, on the Twitter. But, hey, you know, you got a good year going.
It's been an excellent year.
All right, and then how's the Tino handling yesterday's game? I heard him yesterday in the pregame. The only thing, my concern, it is a football question, is I know I was talking to Saraceno and Mike Farmer yesterday, and me and Saraceno kind of had the same feeling that, you know, if the Giants, even if they go 9-7, we're going to have a difficult time even making the playoffs just because Philly and Dallas is doing so well.
Good point, yeah.
You know, for us to win 10 or 11 games, I just don't see it happening.
Well, and then the thing is, Dave, I think you bring up an excellent point. Even if you win 10 games, I don't even know if you're guaranteed to get a wild card spot.
Last year, Arizona won 10 games, didn't make it into the playoffs. That NFC West has a bunch of good teams. Then you throw in Green Bay and Detroit in the NFC North. You'll probably only get one team coming out of the South.
Oh, the South is like below 500 football right now.
And I'm not going to say I know that Dallas and Philly are in, but it's 5-1 and 6-1. It's going to be surprising if both those teams aren't in the playoffs and at 10 wins or more. I think that's probably pretty safe to say. And then if you look down the rest of the teams, you got Arizona, Seattle, and San Francisco. Then you got Detroit. And, of course, you have the Packers. And to me, those are the teams now that are going to be battling for playoff spots. And I think to get in, you're going to need 10. I'm with you on that.
Well, if I was to make a projection right now based on the playoff standings that I have in front of me, I figure 2 reps from the NFC East, 2 reps from the NFC West, 1 from the South, and 1 from the North. That's the breakdown that I see. Now, how does the breakdown equate? Well, you know, San Francisco, Seattle, and Arizona, 2 of those 3 you can make a case that could easily get into the playoffs.
You know what? Here's my prediction. I think you're going to get 2 out of the North and just 1 out of the West. How about that?
So you don't think one team out of the West is going to make the playoffs?
That's going to be my bold prediction. That's going to be my bold prediction.
That is some bold prediction, but
they're going to knock each other off, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, I agree with you, but the Niners, the fact that you're getting Alden Smith back, and you're getting Navarro Bowman back, I think they start to surge late.
That's a fair point.
And they're in a better position to help themselves more so than Seattle, which right now is playing very up and
down.
How
shocked would you be if Seattle's not in the playoffs?
Wouldn't be stunned.
What do you think, 60-40 they're in right now? 70-30 they're in?
I think it's 60-40 right now. And I don't want to hear that it's the Percy Harvin loss. That's not what it is. It's the fact that they're shooting themselves in the foot and they're not playing good on special teams as they were
previously.
And
frankly, Russell Wilson has always been a little overrated. You know, people win Super Bowls and all of a sudden they're the next hot thing. He's not quite on the level of these upper echelon quarterbacks. He's not, to me, he's not even on the level of the Eli and the Romos of the world and, you know, the Matt Ryans and the guys in that group. So, you know, that's all I'm saying with him. Dave, finish up. What else you got for us?
And then just the other thing, too, the odds of 3 teams in one division going to playoffs is
almost
very
never
happens.
Yeah,
right?
It's hard. Correct. Well, look, here, this is the bottom line. If the Giants want any hope of making the playoffs, they need to win their last three NFC East games. They have to beat the Redskins, the Eagles, and the Cowboys in their home building. They have no choice. They have to.
And you have to beat San Francisco and Seattle because those are two teams that are in that same ballpark right above you.
That's a really good point.
You have to win those games. I mean, you can control your own destiny, Dave, with Seattle and San Francisco because you play them. You don't have the luxury of playing Green Bay.
By the way,
and you lost to the Lions.
Already lost to Detroit.
So that could come back to haunt you, and you lost to Arizona already, though right now Arizona's in the driver's seat to win the division anyway.
Boy, you're right. Those tiebreakers are not looking good. They better beat Seattle and San Francisco.
Yeah,
they're finished.
I mean, you have to win these NFC games. I mean, you could talk to me about, we got the schedule up there. Yeah. You want to talk about the Giants beating Jacksonville and Tennessee? Great. They beat Indy? Great. Those are AFC opponents. I mean, listen, you need the wins. Don't get me wrong, Dave, but you got to beat these NFC opponents.
They could be in head-to-head tiebreakers with the Lions, who they've lost to, the Cardinals, who they've lost to, who they're at Seattle, who they still have to play against, and then San Francisco. You're right. Those Seattle and San Francisco games are going to be vital. Absolutely vital.
That's why this loss to Dallas hurt, and we were talking about this leading into the bye, John, that if they could be 4-3 heading into the bye, all is not lost.
You got a shot at 10 wins.
At 3-4, the margin for error in the next three games is absolutely minute. It's absolutely minute because you have to beat Seattle and San Francisco. There's no ands, ifs, or buts. You have to win.
You have to me, and if you want a shot here, you got to win two out of the next four. You have to.
I would say you pretty much got to win three of the next four. I mean, you got to beat Dallas as well as Seattle and San Francisco.
It would be
Indy, you can afford to lose, but still, it's going to come back to haunt you if you lose any of those three games against NFC opponents.
Thanks for the call, Dave.
All right, guys. See ya.
Appreciate
you got it, Dave.
And you know what? Tino was okay yesterday. I think if you talked to him before the game, you got the sense he thought the Giants were going to lose the game anyway. So he wasn't, to me, overly upset. It's when Paul is mentally prepared for a win and then they lose, that's when you start having a bit of the drama. Like against Philly, he thought they were going to win that game. So he was pretty distraught after
that
game.
He was also invested into the game plan. Now, we're not going to reveal all the details, but Paul had an entire scheme laid out for the team against Philadelphia. So that's why he took that loss very, very hard.
Lance, appreciate the time as always.
Sounds good.
And we'll be with you back tomorrow for another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live at noon on Giants.com. We're trying to get Pete Domelatis of Pro Football Focus to give us a little bi-week breakdown on your New York Football Giants. You're watching Big Blue Kickoff Live presented by DraftKings. Thanks for joining us. He's Lance Mennel. I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.